It says the gay science. Gay doesn't mean what it means today. It just means kind of the joyful knowledge, the joyful philosophy and all. But Nietzsche's got this madman parable that sums up a lot of his thought. So we're going to talk about nihilism now. Nihilism is the idea that there is no God, therefore there's no truth, no absolute truth. What in the world is that? No absolute truth, no absolute morality, no meaning in life, okay? So life is just meaningless existence, okay? Now, Sire argues that nihilism is the logical outcome of atheism. In a world without God, nothing makes sense. Okay? Nietzsche, being a nihilist, was consistent with his atheism. But because he was a human being, he couldn't stay in his nihilism, and so he had a little bit of an existential or maybe even a postmodern emphasis in his thought. He had to escape his nihilism while trying to pretend he was facing the facts head on. But let me just read to you the madman. Now, this will help you from the start. Nietzsche is the madman. Okay? So this is his the madman. Have you not heard of that madman who lit a lantern in the bright morning hours, ran to the marketplace and cried incessantly, "I see God, I see God." As many of those who did not believe in God, so these are atheists there, as many of those who do not believe in God were standing around just then, he provoked much laughter. "Why, did he get lost?" said one. "Did he lose his way like a child?" said another. "Or is he hiding? Is he afraid of us? Has he gone on a voyage or emigrated?" Thus they yelled and laughed. The madman jumped into their midst and pierced them with his glances. "Whither is God?" he cried. "I shall tell you. We have killed him. You and I. All of us are his murderers. But how have we done this? How were we able to drink up the sea? Who gave us the sponge to wipe away the entire horizon? What did we do when we unchained this earth from its sun? Whither is it moving now? Whither are we moving now? Away from all suns. Are we not plunging continually? Backward, sideward, forward, in all directions. Is there any up or down left? Are we not straying as through an infinite nothing? Do we not feel the breath of empty space? Has it not become colder? Is not night and more night coming on all the while? Must not lanterns be lit in the morning? Do we not hear anything yet of the noise of the grave diggers who are burying God? Do we not smell anything yet of God's decomposition? God's to decompose. God is dead. God remains dead, and we have killed him. How shall we, the murderers of all murderers, comfort ourselves? What was holiest and most powerful of all that the world has yet owned has bled to death under our knives. Who will wipe this blood off us? What water is there for us to clean ourselves? What festivals of atonement? What sacred games shall we have to invent? Is not the greatness of this deed too great for us? Must not we ourselves become God simply to seem worthy of it? There has never been a greater deed, and whoever will be born after us, for the sake of this deed, he will be part of a higher history than all history hitherto. Here the madman fell silent and looked again at his listeners, and they too were silent and stared at him in astonishment. At last he threw his lantern on the ground, and it broke and went out. "I come too early," he said then. "My time has not come yet. This tremendous event is still on its way, still wandering. It has not reached the ears of man. Lightning and thunder require time. The light of the stars requires time. Deeds require time even after they are done, before they can be seen and heard. This deed is still more distant from them than the most distant stars, and yet they have done it themselves. It has been related further that on that same day the madman entered diverse churches and there sang his Requiem Aeternum Deo, that means, you know, death of God. Let out and called to account, he is said to have replied each time, "What are these churches now if they are not the tombs and sepulchres of God?" Okay, first off, I gave you the answer that, about who is the madman. The madman is Nietzsche. Who is he talking to primarily? Except for the last paragraph. And his followers are
atheists.
He's basically talking to his colleagues. He's talking to atheists. So these guys that are laughing, says, as many of those who do not believe in God were standing around just then. Nietzsche's message was not primarily to Christians. He thought, look at these Neanderthals from the past believing that ancient fairy tale. His primary message was to his fellow atheists. He was saying, look, guys, we threw God off the bridge, but before we threw him off the bridge, we went through his pockets and said, oh, moral values, I like them. Let me hold on to them. Oh, absolute truth, I like that. Meaning in life, I like that. And he's basically saying, look, we had no right to go through God's pockets before throwing him off the bridge. If we throw God off the bridge, there are some consequences, and these things go off the bridge with them. And so he's saying, you know, he's saying the event, the death of God, is something that we are responsible for. We killed God, his blood is on our hands, and you guys don't even realize the consequences of that act. He's saying we killed God is dead, we killed God, and we don't even realize the consequences of our own actions. We think, okay, now God is dead, we've disproven Christianity, now life goes on as it was before. What he's saying is, if the Christian God is dead, everything changes. Up is no longer up, down is no longer down, we've detached the earth from its sun, everything changes. And so, he's in this nihilistic stage, okay? And he even talks about what have churches become. What does he refer to as church, about churches? Tombs of God, yeah. Sepulchre is just another word for a tomb. Yeah, so it's basically, he's saying, I mean, when you go to a grave site and you think about somebody who's dead and gone, that's the same thing as going to church. God is dead. It's a waste of time to go into a church. Now, so you have this nihilistic emphasis in Nietzsche's thought. But you also have this existential, quite possibly even postmodern thrust in his thought that acknowledges, okay, no God, no truth, no morality, no meaning. He even said truth is a metaphor. Truth is nothing but a story, a fairy tale. But he realized we could not live. You know, if we got rid of the Christian myth, man needs a new myth to replace it. Okay? So even with Nietzsche's nihilism, he couldn't live there. So you turn to the page, the overview of Nietzsche. Lived from 1844, died in 1900. He proclaimed that God is dead. He didn't mean that God's existence had been disproven. I mean that he had disproved God. What he was saying, and he wasn't saying God was alive once and then he died. What he was saying is that traditional religion is dead. Christianity was no longer the driving force of Western culture. that the thinkers and the leaders of Western culture had acknowledged that God was created through his primitive imagination and wishful thinking. You know, guys like Ludwig Feuerbach and Sigmund Freud would agree with that. Okay? And so he believed that now the human race has intellectually matured. At least the thinkers and the leaders of Western civilization now saw God to be non-existent. Okay? And so God was no longer the driving force. The Christian God was no longer the driving force of Western culture. Still, Nietzsche argued that even atheist intellectuals were living inconsistently with their worldview. They were living like the Christian God still existed. They were saying, Christian God does not exist, but Christian values are still good. Let's protect innocent life. Let's stand up for justice. And Nietzsche's saying, look, if God is dead, traditional moral values have died with him. If God is dead, everything is now up for grabs. And so Nietzsche said, redefined the good as the will to power. See, if there's no truth and there's no absolute right and wrong, then all that's left is man's thirst for power. And Nietzsche believed, he rejected the soft values of Christianity like kindness and grace. He believed that they held back human creativity and human evolution. And so he recommended hard values through man's will to power. He called for a group of supermen to arise with the courage to create their own values, and that this would further man's evolution. Okay? So he was calling for supermen or overmen. The Adolf Hitler and the Nazis believed that they were these overmen. Now, before Hitler came to power, when the Nazis were spreading their propaganda through Germany in the late 19th century, Nietzsche opposed the Nazi movement because he was not anti-Semitic. But my question for Nietzsche is, look, Nietzsche, you're a weak guy. You're probably, the Superman is everything that you're not. So when somebody comes arrive, when a group of people arrive on the scene and claim that they are the overman, the superman, and they start creating their own hard values, if you don't like it, you don't have a say, Nietzsche. Because you've thrown God's moral absolutes out the window. How can you say it's wrong to be anti-Semitic? The Christian could say it's wrong to be anti-Semitic. But what basis does Nietzsche have to call anti-Semitism wrong? And yeah, so I mean, will to power is all there is. And it seems to me, if supermen are racist, Nietzsche can't put a stop to that. You know, and by the way, when you throw Christian truth out the window, you may not like it, but the ancient myths will resurface. And if you read Sigmund Freud, with the Oedipus complex, and you read Nietzsche, when he talked about the Apollyon cult, the Dionysian cult, okay? He brought back, resurrected the ancient myths as well. And that's what postmodernism is doing today. It's like, no, we're too advanced and too intellectual to believe in Christian fairy tales. And so what are they doing? They're bringing back ancient myths, ancient pagan myths. But Apollinarian cult, the cult around the Greek god Apollo, was the god of art and science, the orderly god, the god of order and design. Nietzsche was not really opposed to it. But he thought that through Christianity we put too much emphasis on that, and we needed more of a balance. And so rather than the soft values of the cult around Apollo, we needed the cult of Dionysius to come back, the god of wine and revelry, the god of partying, the god of instinct and passion. And so he wanted the hard values to make a comeback. And so he called for a group of supermen through their will to power to arise with the courage to create their own values. Now, Nietzsche believed that he predicted that the 20th century, atheists of the 20th century, would realize the consequences of a world without God, that without God there are no moral absolutes, and that man is free to play God and create his own values. So he predicted that the 20th century would be the bloodiest century in human history, and that was exactly the case. Now, let me say this. I presented a paper. Okay, Nietzsche presented a paper before the regional meeting at Multnomah, before the Evangelical Theological Society, where I argued that, you know, I showed that Nietzsche argued that if God is dead, truth is dead, and morality is dead, and meaning in life is dead. In other words, Nietzsche argued, if there is no God, nihilism follows. Okay? But then Nietzsche argued, when we acknowledge that God is dead, truth is dead, morality is dead, meaning is dead, that will lead, there'll be some growing pains, bloodiest century in the history of mankind, the 20th century, Nietzsche was right in that prediction, but that would lead to the arrival of the Superman, the next stage in the evolution of man. It would lead to the advancement of the human race. It would lead to the furtherance of human evolution, human progress. Well, without even referring to Nietzsche, C.S. Lewis, in his Abolition of Man, and Francis Schaeffer, his Back to Freedom and Human Dignity, where he responds to B.F. Skinner's behavioral theories, where we should manipulate human beings through genetic engineering. C.S. Lewis and Francis Schaeffer pointed out that basically, if God is dead, not only is truth, morality, and meaning dead, but man is dead. Okay. In other words, nihilism shows that if there is no God, man is trash. Man is dead as well. God is dead, man is dead. That's where that would be consistent nihilism. Out of the 5 points, Nietzsche got 4 of the points consistently, but he could not bring himself to man is dead, and so instead he came up with his own myth of the Superman. Okay? And but even Nietzsche had this view that of eternal recurrence, where he believed, because he was an atheist, he believed the universe was eternal. So given infinite time, but a finite number of molecules in the universe, that when the molecules are reshuffled, given infinite time, history will repeat itself over and over again throughout all eternity. So even in the end, even with if his Superman came on the scene to further human evolution, eventually we'd be right back to square one in primordial soup. Okay? And when you have it going on, an eternal merry-go-round, a meaningless merry-go-round. Again, you get right back to man is dead. But basically what I'm getting at, Nietzsche is the most consistent atheist who ever lived, but even he could not face the death of man. C.S. Lewis and Francis Schaeffer argue, look, if you reject the God of the Bible, man is dead. Lewis said, in the abolition of man, it will create men without chest, men without consciences. The few will control the billions. Science will be used to manipulate and control all of nature, including the last thing in nature to be controlled will be man. Francis Schaeffer argued that B.F. Skinner's behavioral theories will lead to, man being viewed as a thing to be controlled through genetic engineering and the controlling of man's environment. See, B.F. Skinner argued, he was a naturalist, okay, behavioral psychologist, he was an atheist, a naturalist, and he argued that man does not have free will. All our choices, all our ideas are biologically controlled, okay? Just like, you know, somebody gets the hiccups and somebody else gets the idea to blow up a building. So then B.F. Skinner said, well, we the intellectuals, there's no such thing as right and wrong, there's no such thing as free will. Mankind is controlled by his genetic makeup and his environment. Therefore, we the intellectuals should control, this is what behaviorism is all about, should control man's environment and through genetic engineering, move mankind, the future of mankind, in the right direction. Now, Francis Schaeffer pointed out, now wait a minute, how can you move mankind in the right direction if there's no right and wrong? So you're resurrecting Christian values and absolute morality to say that the world should be moved in the right direction. That's number one. Number two, if nobody is free, then even B.F. Skinner and his atheistic intellectuals are not free to come up with their behavioristic views. So if man is not free, if we're biologically determined, all our ideas, then so is B.F. Skinner's behaviorism. And so Schaeffer argued we need to get back to freedom and human dignity in response to B.F. Skinner's book, Beyond Freedom and Human Dignity. Schaeffer said we need to get back to freedom and human dignity, but the only way is to acknowledge that God is creator and he created us in his image, therefore human life is sacred. And we do have free will and God, we are held accountable by God. C.S. Lewis argued that by rejecting God and rejecting moral absolutes and rejecting absolute truth, we are going to, man is going to be treated as subhuman and is going to even think in a subhuman way. We're going to think in terms of what do I feel like doing rather than what is right and what is wrong. And the government's going to think in terms not of how do we protect man's rights, but how do we enslave them and control them. And but I just want to show you there that Nietzsche could not remain consistent with his nihilism. He had to eventually himself make somewhat of an existential leap or settle for a postmodern story or narrative or fairy tale. And now, this leads to existentialism. Existentialism starts where nihilism ends. If you take out that page that says Sartre on the top, or Sartre is the way our encyclopedia says to pronounce his name, but all of his friends, and Sartre was a Marxist, but all his friends from France, when they're interviewed, they refer to him as Sartre. So I think that the French would say they're pronouncing it Sartre, but when a Frenchman pronounces it, it always comes out Sartre. You know, so whatever the case, I call him Sartre. But Peter Kreeft, the Catholic apologist, who usually defends Christianity rather than defending Catholicism, but whatever the case, brilliant thinker from Boston College, but he quotes from Sartre and existentialism and humanism, and I like the excerpts he uses here, so let me just read some of them. Sartre says this in existentialism and humanism, God does not exist, and we have to face all the consequences of this. Sounds like Nietzsche. The existentialist, on the contrary, thinks it's very distressing that God does not exist because all possibility of finding values in a heaven of ideas disappear with him. See, he's saying just what Nietzsche said. Nietzsche's saying, why are you guys laughing? He's talking to atheists. Why are you guys laughing? Don't you even realize what we just did by killing God? Don't you realize now anything goes? You can't even call murder or rape evil. We can't even say this is true, this is false. We can't even act like life has meaning. Don't you realize it's like we're standing at the edge of a cliff and we take a step off that cliff and we're just suspended on empty space. What keeps us from falling? We have no foundation under our feet anymore. We've detached the earth from its sun. And so Sartre is saying the same thing that Nietzsche's saying. He's saying the existentialist, on the contrary, thinks it is very distressing that God does not exist. So a true existentialist, like a true nihilist, says God does not exist. Instead of applauding, he starts weeping. It's almost like the existentialist says, God doesn't exist. Oh my God. What am I going to do now? And all of a sudden he realizes, I'm alone in the universe. God isn't there to ground my existence. God isn't there to protect me, to give me life after death. Then he quotes from a Christian thinker, Dostoevsky, said, if God didn't exist, everything would be permissible. This is the very starting point of existentialism. See, no God, no such thing as right and wrong. If God does not exist, we find no values or commands to turn to which legitimize our conduct. So, Sartre believe God is dead? Yes, and it terrifies him like it terrified Nietzsche. By the way, Nietzsche, called himself the madman, died insane. Some believe it was because he had a venereal disease that ate away at his brain. It's tough to say, but whatever the case, he, the madman, did die insane, and he did come before his time. Atheists are just starting to realize the consequences of a world without God. But Sartre, as an existentialist, yes, God is dead. Yes, truth is dead. Morality is dead. Meaning is dead, but we can't live that way. So rather than acknowledging that man is dead, it's like, okay, we come into life a blank check. God didn't fill it out. We have the freedom to fill out our own check, to actualize ourselves. So Sartre would say, whether you help the elderly lady cross the street, or you mug her and take her money, all that's really important is you've actualized yourself. You've given meaning to your life. In other words, life has no meaning. Man desperately needs meaning. We need to actualize ourselves and create meaning for our lives. Okay? The existentialist says, look, my reason, whatever that is, my thinking tells me that life has no meaning. I can't live that way, so I am going to take a non-rational leap of blind faith and by an act of the will create meaning for my life. So Nietzsche's will to power, when he threw reason out the window, all that was left was man's will. The existentialist takes, it's an act of the will. So it's like reason, thinking, truth are thrown out the window. Now it's what I want, what I desire, what I need. And so you just create meaning for your lives. And so you actualize yourself. And, you know, but even Albert Camus, his fellow French existentialist, pointed out to Sartre over and over again that Sartre could not live consistently with his existentialism. But here's Sartre fought for the French resistance during World War II. Why fight the Nazis? There's no such thing as right or wrong. Now, he was saying, well, I was just actualizing myself. Well, hey, the Nazis were just actualizing themselves. And Sartre cannot tell me. He ended up spending time in a concentration camp and suffering. Did Sartre really expect us, of course he's dead now, but when he was alive, did he really expect us to believe that the Nazis weren't right and he wasn't wrong? All the times he protested and stood for what was right? That's why Albert Camus is a little bit more honest when he says the only question philosophers have to face is why not suicide? And so the existentialist takes that leap of blind faith into the non-rational realm. Let me talk just a little bit about secular humanism. Humanist Manifestos 1 and 2, very small document. You can read it in about 40 minutes, which is not to slam it. Some of the best documents ever written were very short. Some of the books in the Bible are very short. Constitution of the United States, Declaration of Independence, very short document. But Paul Kurtz edited the second version, and now he recently drafted, had signed Humanist Manifesto 2000, a call for a new planetary humanism. But at least in Humanist Manifesto number one, written in 1933, by the way, Humanist Manifesto number 2, 1973, and now Humanist Manifesto 2000, the three biggest documents. That's why it was kind of an honor to be invited by Paul Kurtz's organization to an atheist conference from atheist thinkers from all over the world to be the token theist to debate an atheist at University of North Carolina Chapel Hill campus. He may have even gotten some of the signatures at that, but it was probably the biggest gathering of atheist thinkers since 1973. But let me say this. These guys were real big in 1933. They were still pretty big in 1973. They're on the way out. These are the dinosaurs now. Because what secular humanism is an optimistic atheism. Secular humanism is almost synonymous with modernism. And modernism is dead. It's the idea that God is dead, God doesn't exist, but through human reason we could find all truth, find the right morality, find meaning in life, save the planet, and man is truly alive because God is dead. None of this stuff follows. In fact, you can even push, you know, even in the writings, even in the Humanist Manifestos 1 and 2, they acknowledge that morality is not absolute, that nobody has a corner on the truth. So, this is that, you remember when we drew the diagram of the author, Sire, who went from Christianity to deism, then to atheism, and he had the optimistic atheist and the pessimistic. Well, Marxists were optimistic because they thought they were going to bring about utopian society. Well, secular humanists are also optimistic. Okay? But eventually it gives way to nihilism, and then there's the existential leap out of it. Because man can't live in despair, and that's what nihilism is, total despair. But anyway, in Humanist Manifesto number one, they had guys like John Dewey, the father of the modern education system. He was one of the signers of this document. But in Humanist Manifesto number one, They actually refer to themselves as religious, and they say traditional religion is dead. We need a new religion, a religion based on the understanding that no God exists. So they actually call themselves religious. By the second Humanist Manifesto, 1973, they then started arguing, no, we're not a religion, even though they refer to themselves as a faith over and over again, because they were now arguing that you need to take religion out of the schools. But they wanted their ideas taught in the schools. So now they argue they're not a religion, when in 1933 they argued that they were. But it says, it's the responsibility which rests upon this generation. We therefore, okay, to establish such a religion is a major necessity of the present. A religion without God, without superstition. Responsibility which rests upon this generation, we therefore affirm the following. This is Humanist Manifesto number one. First, religious humanists regard the universe as self-existing and not created. So the universe exists without being created. Second, humanism believes that man is a part of nature and that he has emerged as the result of a continuous process. So it's evolution. Third, holding an organic view of life, humanists find that the traditional dualism of mind and body must be rejected. So, in the end, it leads to behaviorism because there's no immaterial soul. Fourth, the individual born into a particular culture is largely molded to that culture. They can't explain how a Hindu converts to Christianity. Radical conversion, because they act like, no, you're a Hindu because you grew up in India, you're a Christian because you grew up in America. Fifth, humanism asserts that the nature of the universe depicted by modern science makes unacceptable any supernatural or cosmic guarantees of human values. They go on and on. Okay, ninth, in place of the old attitudes involved in worship and prayer, the humanist finds his religious emotions expressed in a heightened sense of personal life and in a cooperative effort to promote social well-being. So, I mean, you know, they end up going on about how they're going to save the planet, based on a religion without God. Humanist Manifesto number two. And both these manifestos, they talk about traditional religion being harmful. They talk about no deity will save us, no God will save us, we must save ourselves. Okay? How man's going to save the planet. Optimistic. It's like modernism. God is dead, but through human reason and human technology, we will find all truth and solve every problem and save the planet. Modernism is dead. It has failed so miserably it has led to postmodernism. We'll be talking about that on the final week. But we talked about this earlier where they say that in reference to ethics in Humanist Manifesto number two, we affirm that moral values derive their source from human experience. Ethics is autonomous and situational, needing no theological or ideological sanction. Okay? And so they're basically saying ethics is autonomous. Each person decides what is right and what is wrong. And they say human life has meaning because we create and develop our futures. What in the world are you talking about? That makes no sense. You know, human life has meaning because we want it to have meaning. That just doesn't work. But then they say this. In the area of sexuality, we believe that intolerant attitudes, often cultivated by Orthodox religions and puritanical cultures, unduly repress sexual conduct. The right to birth control, abortion, and divorce should be recognized. While we do not approve of exploitive, denigrating forms of sexual expression, neither do we wish to prohibit by law or social sanction sexual behavior between consenting adults. Okay, how can they condemn intolerant attitudes if ethics is autonomous? If each person decides what is right and what is wrong, an intolerant person decides intolerance is the way to go, and a tolerant person decides to tolerate. There's no way for a tolerant person to tell an intolerant person to stop being intolerant, yet they do that. Also, after saying ethics is autonomous, they say that they don't wish to prohibit sexual behavior between consenting adults. Well, that's a fancy way, a nice way of saying they're against rape and incest. But if ethics is autonomous, you can't condemn rape or incest. See, so what they're doing is they're failing to come to grips. They are the atheists that are laughing at Nietzsche when he's saying God is dead. He's saying, we already know God is dead. And Nietzsche's saying, well, you're not acting like it.
Have some fun.
Yeah. Well, what he's saying, you know, Nietzsche's saying until we force through our will to power our own new morals down everybody else's throat, until we come up with some politically correct new morality, anything goes. These guys don't even see that. They're still stuck. They're still like the atheists of Nietzsche's day, who are laughing and don't even realize that if God is dead, everything changes. They talk about building a world community, a one world socialistic government, and they continue their goals in Humanist Manifesto 2000. But we'll talk about that when we talk about postmodernism versus modernism. We'll talk a little bit more about that. And anybody have any questions or comments? Yeah.
Do they happen to think that there are no more things we can use so that we can build them, that we can build a class maker, or that we discovered or that we build them?
The totally consistent atheists would say there are no moral absolutes. There is no absolute truth. You know, that statement implies it's an absolute truth. The less consistent atheists would say, well, we can try to find them. Maybe there are absolute truths and absolute morals, and let's try to find them. So they come up with all sophisticated ways to try to justify that without God. That has failed so miserably that most atheists will acknowledge there is no absolute truth, and there are no absolute moral laws, yet they end up coming up with, they end up sneaking in the back door moral laws that look a lot like, that they treat as if they're absolute moral laws, and truths that they treat as if they're absolute truths. For, you know, if there is no absolute truth, then the statement, God does not exist, cannot be true. So, I mean, you just can't, basically you can't live with nihilism. What Sire argues and what I argue is there is no worldview that when everything's said and done, it is consistent in all its essential teachings except the Christian worldview. And so atheism, the only consistent form of atheism would be nihilism, but no one can live there. Even Nietzsche, probably the most consistent atheist who ever lived, had to call for his Superman, his will to power, his hard values, and, you know, had to come up with a new myth.
You'd have to exist like a robot and live a perfect life even to be a nihilist.
Actually, to be a nihilist, I don't even think a nihilist can justify eating his next meal.
Exactly.
So
you'd have to be a robot.
I think you'd be closer to Camus saying, "Well, why not suicide?"
Right.
what's keeping us from killing ourselves. But I think even to kill yourself would be to act like that was the right thing to do. So I think all Aeneas would do, to be consistent, would be just to ask, why not suicide? Why not suicide? Why not suicide? Not eat, not do anything else, and just keep asking the question until he dies. So it's kind of like most atheists today, most thinking atheists will say there are no absolute truths, there are no absolute morality. But then, you know, they'll say things like there's no absolute moral laws. What's right for you is right for you, doesn't have to be right for me, and vice versa. Therefore, you should not tell people to stop having abortions. See, once they tell you should not, they're